The passing of President George Herbert Walker Bush brought recognition to his career of service to America through the many roles that he took on in his life. The president's passing also brought attention to his service dog, Sully, especially through the, I believe, already iconic photo of Sully continuing to be at the ready to serve as he laid beside the president's casket. You've probably seen service dogs in action briefly in your day-to-day life, but what kind of dog is needed for that role, and what duties do they actually perform? Here to educate us all on this important part of many people's lives is the founder of Merlin's Kids, Janice Wolf. How are you today, Janice?
I am great. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for the work that you do, which hopefully will bring to the attention of many people and help your cause as well. Merlinskids.org is Janice's website to find out more how you can play a role in her work or if you're in need of the services she offered. That's the wonderful thing about websites. It works in every degree. So what is a service dog? Let's start with that definition as a foundation.
Great. Well, a service dog is actually, as defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, is an animal, which was then changed specifically to service dogs, an animal who's trained to perform a task to mitigate a disability. So if a dog, let's say, helps you to feel better, like we've heard of emotional support and comfort dogs, every dog, you purchase a dog or you rescue a dog or an animal or a pet to give you comfort. So every dog is automatically a comfort dog. So we have to really get into the disabilities aspect of it, which means there's a disability, whether it's emotional or physical or a combination. It can be autism, can be a heart defect where someone has rapid heartbeat, cortisol. There's so many different things, seizures, blood sugar alerts. And the dog actually is acting as what we call an assistive device. So imagine if someone needed a cane to be able to walk, or someone needs something to help them to do something because of their disability that was limiting them. And that's the difference between a trained service dog that's from a reputable agency and a reputable trainer who has extensive experience and somebody who either may not have that expertise or perhaps just takes their own pet, goes and buys a vest online, and thinks they're scamming the system.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate truth. And some of those service dogs, probably the most common understanding of them is someone who helps a dog who helps a blind person. What are some of the more lesser understood elements of what a service dog's capabilities and the things they perform for a person are?
That's a great question, because we've all seen guide dogs through the years, and those were the first ones. Some of the agencies have actually been around for about 80 years doing this, so it's not a new concept. But about 30 some odd years ago, I realized that, you know, my husband, who started the DARE program and started more than 200 canine units up and down the East Coast and was in charge of the Bergen County canine units in Bergen County, New Jersey, as well as training with all the U.S. Customs and all these other locations, experts. My husband was doing some of the scent training for narcotics, and it dawned on me, and I said, you know, this is 34 years ago. I said, why can't I train a dog to find cancer? Why can't I train a dog to find different smells or different issues and train that dog to do other tasks? And that's where Merlin's Kids was born. I wanted to take dogs who had maybe not the best upbringing, so rescue dogs, shelter dogs, people's dogs who they just didn't want or couldn't keep anymore, and turn those dogs into lifelines for these people. And of course, it's extremely expensive, but we now, and for the last 20 some odd years, have been training dogs for diabetic alert, for hypoglycemia, for mobility assist, to help someone with cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy or other disabilities or amputees to get on and off the commode. You don't realize how simple tasks that we take it for granted, like lifting yourself up from a chair or from the commode, are things that really make us human. And when someone isn't able to do those skills or tasks, and a service dog can give them back that mobility, that life, it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer. So if you know what you're doing, you can really train a dog to do almost anything. So I've been a canine behaviorist for the better part of my life, and I studied, and that's one of my degrees, is animal behavior and genetics. I've always been interested in what dogs could do. And one of my very good friends, Vicky, who I met at Columbia University when I was studying there undergrad, had a service dog named Honey. This was a guide dog. So I really got that early when I was about 17. I really got that hands-on and said, my gosh, this is amazing. And that's where the thought of what else can these dogs do was born.
Talking with Janice Wolf, who is the founder of Merlin's Kids. Merlinskids.org is the website. Find out more about her services, as well as how you can aid in the cause, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So a service dog doesn't just perform tasks at a command. They can sense, as you said, if a diabetic blacks out, they can sense and know what to do if something goes wrong or is out of the ordinary.
Oh, absolutely. But the issue is how you train them. And this is where Merlin's Kids is very, very well respected. And almost, I've had a few people in the industry say, we don't know how you do it, because we don't use treats and cookies and commands. We use behavior, because I'm a behaviorist, a canine and equine behaviorist. So if you're going to train a dog to do something like mobility, where the person, or a guide dog, where the person has the mental and emotional capabilities of telling a dog left, right, up, elevator, lift, or you can give a command, you can use obedience and you can use a lot of different techniques to do that. But when you start with a dog who might, let's say, need to be trained to break someone out of night terrors, you're not going to give them a cookie to wake the person up, because they're going to start developing a behavior where they're going to actually wake that person up from night terrors to get a cookie. So you have to really have a very strong behavioral background. But our dogs all do it, and we joke about it being autopilot. In fact, from personal experience, I've had Wyatt and Savannah and Wispa, while I was in interviews or doing something else, actually alert. And literally every 5 minutes, the dog is alerting where the person interviewing or the person in the meeting with me said, why does your dog keep jumping up and trying to get your attention? And I'd joke and I'd say, well, because I'm kind of blowing him off because I want to finish this. But my blood sugar is probably dropping as we speak. So about every 5 minutes or so, the dogs know that the first time I'm generally not going to listen to them. So the alerts get stronger and stronger. So when you find the right match, and that's really the key, not just finding someone who says, oh, I'm going to train a dog for you. You've got to have somebody who's got 15 or 20 different dogs to say which of these dogs is going to be your new match. Think about it like a marriage. So either you're going to make someone do a task, and not that the dogs aren't going to love you, but it's one way, is kind of like living with a sibling who can kind of get on your nerves versus living with your spouse who you met and you fell in love with and means everything to you. One of them is going to be a more healthy relationship in certain ways, and it's going to be easier for the dog to bond to you when the dog likes you. And the dog, of course, is going to perform better because it wants to do that job. It's not just stuck doing that job. I hope that makes sense. But that's really what my goal is to make sure that people understand that you can't just take any old dog and train it. About 1 in 10 dogs can be a therapy dog. They're good dogs. They don't do anything task-wise, but they can just be a good, happy, healthy dog that can visit people in the hospital or in a nursing home or help children to read. I've found that only about 1 or 2 in 100 dogs has what it takes to be a service dog. So it's not just the tasks even, it's public access, making sure the dog isn't reactive with other dogs, with cats. It's going to see a squirrel and take off, and making sure the dog doesn't get distracted. And that's why we ask people, please don't pet the dog. Please don't talk to the dog, because the dog has a job to do. And you can be distracting even by talking in a baby voice or staring at the dog, even if you're not petting. So it's really important. And of course, it's so expensive. Our dogs typically run between $24,000 and $30,000, and we subsidize them. So many people pay nothing. Some people are able to help us fundraising. Some people, wonderful people, maybe like some of your listeners, might be able to make a donation so we can place other free service dogs. But we've done so many, and every single one has changed a life.
in that location to, as I've been saying to you during the segment, to become part of the work of Maryland's Kids is MarylandsKids.org. And, of course, we have a link over to our website, too. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. We're having our time with their founder, Janice Wolf. I mentioned the president's service dog in the introduction and the photo that we've all seen. It's been an emotional tug at our heart. The connection that you just described as between the person and the dog is a mutual benefit, because the dog, I believe, and from what you say too, I'm growing an understanding that the dog develops a sense of purpose and accomplishment and being needed, which is a positive in any person's life, whether or not you want to admit it. But when that person passes away, and again, I'll reference that photo with Merlin lying there by the president's casket, does the dog know, something's not right here? And what happens to a service dog when that connection is eliminated because that person passes away?
That is such a great question. And, you know, you have to realize that it is a bond. And depending on how strong the bond was, that is going to tell you what's going to happen. For instance, if someone passes away and they've had one of our Merlin's Kids dogs, we do not remove the dog. The dog can stay with the family unless the family specifically chooses to give us the dog back for another veteran. Most agencies take the dog back. And in this case, to me, it was a very young dog. I don't know how bonded it was, but the dog knows that, hey, I'm supposed to be with you. And how come I'm not with you? But dogs do understand death. They absolutely do, which is why anyone who's ever lost a pet and sees the other pets in the home, the dog will come up and smell you in a different way, because dogs can smell death. I also train dogs to be cadaver dogs as part of their training process. So many of them will actually be able to tell if someone has passed away. For instance, when my mom just passed away a couple months ago, which was, you know, devastating, I came home and all my dogs who knew her alive came up and smelled my hands, just my hands, because I had been holding onto her hands after she passed away. So there is a smell there. My dogs have even alerted on people who visited their loved ones at a cemetery. The gas is escaping through the grave site. So you've got to realize dogs have incredible senses of smell. So if you take an animal who is in love, for lack of a better way to say it, with his or her human, and that human passes, they are so loyal, they are actually going to stay nearby. The difference is dogs will typically grieve for about 3 days versus humans, who may grieve forever. But, of course, that picture is just heartbreaking, and unfortunately we've had that happen a few times with some of the veterans we've given free service dogs to, where the veteran has passed, or one of them was a little boy who passed away, and of course we let the families keep the dogs because it's almost an extension of that person who passed, because it was their dog. And I think the Bushes would have probably really enjoyed having the dog who meant so much to their dad in their house, because it would have been that constant reminder and that life of, hey, part of dad is still here because here's Sully. But everybody has different policies, and, you know, I'm not going to get into that. But dogs are, as we all know, amazing creatures, and I don't think I can imagine my life without them.
Nor can the recipients of all the love and the care and the service that these dogs provide so many people in need. Learn more about how you can help the work of Merlin's Kids, become a part of it, and donating your money, services, time, just even a sharing of their website on your social media pages. Make more people aware of the important role that a service dog plays in the lives of many people. Merlinskids.org is the website that they do it. They're located here in New Jersey. But wherever you are, it's an important message to be shared no matter where you are. MerlinsKids.org. We've been joined by their founder, Janice Wolf. Janice, thanks so much for the education. You've given us a better understanding of the importance that these best friends of people, not just man's best friends of people provide. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much.